Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter.
Hey Watchers, it's Jason, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. This is episode 64, and I would like to thank our loyal fans who keep supporting us every week. We love you, and would do anything for you. Seriously, anything. This week, Nyan and Dan give their feedback on episodes 1, 2, and 3 of the anime TV show Cyberpunk Edgerunners. The show is from 2022 and is available on Netflix. We discuss Giancarlo Esposito's work ethic, our favorite cartoon crushes, and why Nyan was banned from an amusement park. If you are digging this podcast, please subscribe and rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, or just give us a shout out on our social media pages. Finally, if you have a show or movie you want us to watch, please leave us a voicemail on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, Watchers. Get ready for some animation damnation while we discuss Cyberpunk Edgerunners. Hey Watchers, this is Jason, and we are back today to discuss the show Cyberpunk Edgerunners. It's available on Netflix, and it came out in 2022. And as a reminder, this was a bit of an unusual pitch for me because I haven't actually seen the show. It was my son who insisted that I see the show. And so I did after I told Nyan and Dan here they should watch it with me. So Nyan, Dan, what did you guys think?
I understand why Simon locks the door when he watches this and plays the game. That makes more sense now.
Yeah.
And it's less about the violence, but just the random flashes of nudity was, I did not expect that. I watched this early in the morning. Same. I was like, this is random.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, I know this makes perfect sense now. I totally understand.
Yeah. I was watching this in the middle of my living room. And I was very glad No one was walking by when a couple of those shots came on.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think no one was around when I watched it either. It was later in the evening, I want to say.
So Dan, what did you think?
Yeah, no, I actually really enjoyed it. I think that there's a lot of, you know, the plot is really interesting. You know, again, there's, you know, just like the game, you know, there's a lot of dystopian future, you know, related anime, not just anime, but any content that exists out in the ether or whatnot. This is kind of the bridging that cyberpunk kind of, you know, weird, again, not too much of a larger stretch in the future where, you know, you see right away that, you know, that there clearly are haves and have nots, and the have nots are a vast, way larger majority, obviously, out there. So, no, I enjoyed a lot of the, you know, the dialogue and the characters. I did, full disclosure, I did not get a chance to go back and watch any of the dub. I did watch the sub, but I've heard the dub is pretty good.
I did the dub only, and I was quite happy with it. I started actually with the sub, and after 5 minutes, I was like, I'm just going to switch to the dub because I think it's easier to watch that. Especially with animation, you know, it's one thing when it's actual actors.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to kind of take in all the pieces of the animation.
Exactly.
And also read the subtitles at the same time. So that's the biggest reason why dubs are great, is that you don't have to, you know, be reading those letters at the same time when you could say, oh, well, I want to look at the lighting and the shadows and the highlights of this shot, you know, if you will. So, yeah, I feel that.
I actually ended up watching just the dub. And when I thought it was good, it wasn't enough where, in my mind, bad enough to the point where I was like, oh, I should try the sub out. I thought the dub held up pretty well.
Yeah, that's what I'd heard. Yeah.
All the random jargon that they keep throwing out there, which I assume makes sense if you played the game, because I still have not played this game. Actually, that was your assignment, Jason, to watch someone play the game, be it your son or a random person on the internet. And did you end up doing that?
I did not end up doing that. I should have, but I didn't.
I'll have to catch like a random Twitch stream some point, yeah.
Simon was then telling me that apparently there's a whole world beyond the game, too. Like, I guess the game is based on some other material that was created before that. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he was telling me.
Okay.
But he would insist that it's definitely not Choom.
nothing. Come on, Shum.
Like, come on, Shum.
Yeah, that the random jargon kind of threw me a little bit. It reminded me of stuff like Snow Crash, that Neal Stephenson novel from back in the day, where there I could tolerate it, maybe because I read it when I was younger. But then just that sort of made up language that randomly pops up in things like Clockwork Orange. It's the other thing I'm thinking of, another dystopian future where I need to be in the right mood for that, or I need to be in the right age range for that, where I'm just
right. Well, again, you know, there's some people like, again, Battlestar Galactica, for example, the term, you know, the use of frack in place of the other F word was a little bit more easier bridge to gap in my mind. Whereas, like, you know, you hear Star Wars slang like Dank Ferrick, you know, I mean, and that's even more of an extreme. So, but I think this takes it to a whole other level because the words are less exotic, I guess. The Choom sounds less exotic than those other Star Wars terms are to me. And so maybe, I don't know, that maybe that's what took me off guard. I don't know.
Yeah, that threw me off. But at the same time, I think I did make it through all three episodes. It wasn't quite as compelling enough for me to consider continuing. Like, it wasn't bad. In the beginning when I started, I was like, I'm not sure if I'm totally into this. But by the time episode three came around and I was like, oh, it's the cyberpunks from the statistics. and I was like, okay, this makes a little bit more sense. I can see something. At the very end, they introduced that one character of episode three. And I was like, oh, this guy sounds like Giancarlo Esposito. Is it him? I didn't check.
It is him.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody else is just like a voice actor. And then Giancarlo Esposito shows up.
he's quite literally the hardest working man in showbiz right now.
Oh, yeah. That is wild.
I don't think he really hit his big break until he was in his 50s. And now he is milking this character, you know, his like businessman villain character for all that it's worth.
And it's great that he gets to, you know, have a different take on that kind of persona as from his, you know, as Edgar from The Boys, you know? So I think that's really interesting that he gets to do two different villainous businessmen, but in different ways, basically.
I don't even know. I mean, isn't that kind of what he always plays? He's in, obviously his character in Breaking Bad, Gus Fring, was also, you know, very businessman. Suited up.
Yeah.
And he does other versions of, I swear he just seems to always play this.
And obviously in the Mandalorian, obviously he has a kind of that leader stature. He's almost businesslike in some ways.
Yes. I like definitely senior VP level evil in the Mandalorian. That's definitely what I get from him. Okay.
Yeah. By the way, I decided that I have to start using a new term instead of RBF, as you would say, Dedra's character in Andor. You have anyone who is like is more evil, you call them RSF. It's Arresting Sith Face. So that's the new term I have to start using now. So but yeah, I mean I think that's cool. Like I said, I might just have to go back and watch. I think I will continue it, for the record. I think I may have to drop in an episode of the dub here or there, just so I get a taste of what you guys got. So I think that might be fun. But I mean, the opening theme is sweet. I mean,
yes, I agree. I really enjoyed the opening theme. I thought it was good. It felt more so. I've barely watched any anime, so really all I can compare it to is Black Lagoon.
Right. Red Fraction, and, right.
And that had this like really weird, it was a good opening theme, but it was like almost nonsensical relative to the rest of the show. This at least felt like it belonged with this particular show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree. I think I'm going to have to come up. I think what I'm going to have to do is I might have to do like a top 20 openings or closings ever. And I might just have to like curate that for you to watch, just where you could say, hey, these are the best ones that I know about. And then you can go from there.
That sounds like a YouTube video right there, Dan.
It is. It is 100% a YouTube video. But, you know, because each
anime theme songs.
Yeah, it is. But I think all the ones out there are going to be, they're going to be heavily, you know, flexed towards specifically all the shonen stuff. It's okay. It's like the top 20 is going to be overly loaded with One Piece, Naruto, and like maybe a splattering of Boruto, Black Clover, and maybe some Dragon Ball related properties in there. But there's so many others out there that people like, they forget about, honestly.
Speaking of random anime properties, there's something that struck me, and I want to see if Dan, if it struck you the same way, was when the rich kid character starts to, is fighting D, and mm-hmm. he pulls in the Strongarm 400, and it sounded almost exactly like one of the guys from Fist of the North Star.
Yes, no, no. I that's one of my notes here. I'm like, dude, that dude went all Kenshiro and David. So, yeah. Or the English sub version, you know, 100 crack fists of the North Star. Yeah. So, yeah, I'll have to watch that clip again now too.
Yeah.
That was
Fist of the North Star was this anime that went on forever. It was based on a manga. It was basically just a
guy also went on forever.
Oh yeah, yeah. It was basically this martial arts master that was wandering through an apocalyptic wasteland, and just the sound effects from him punching things was just so distinctive. It seems like it's become a meme. I could be wrong.
It is. But no, I agree. 100% it has.
And it definitely, like that thing where he's like that definitely felt yeah. like an homage to that.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta yeah. check that out. That sounds yeah. fun. Maybe not like the actual series, but.
Oh, no, it goes on forever.
God. No, no. I mean, again, it starts off as kind of like, you know, this, you know, broody thing, and it develops more into kind of a revenge kind of plot, so to speak, to follow. So again, it's a super interesting series. Again, if you want to sit down and watch it, the animation is very, I'll call it classic. But they did do a reboot/spinoff of it, where they kind of reset some of the events of it in the early 20th century. I never watched the series just because it just felt really odd choice to me, but it exists. So if that's your fancy. So, but yeah, no, the OG is like pretty wild, and they actually did a live action version of it too. And right. The live action's pretty, I think it's one of those almost Mystery Science Theater level kind of watches, in my opinion. But yeah, so, but it was comical. I think I was heavily into a bottle of bourbon at that night, and that helped a lot. So
fair enough.
But yeah, I did have a note about Kenshiro. That was wild. But yeah, there's a lot of things out that happen that are just horrible. I mean, the fact that, you know, not just the disparate have and have not differences, but it's just like, D couldn't report his classmate because his classmate assaulted him first. Yeah, so it's like there's a lot of like inequity because he doesn't have, you know, the big old powerful father behind him. Like, he can't report his classmate for hitting him first. I mean, that's just kind of whack for me.
I guess thinking of along the lines of parents, for some reason I wrote, I wish parents would stop believing in their children and just let them be cyberpunks, which seems to be working out well for him. Like, once he kind of gets going, he does a decent job. He got to drive a car, which he hadn't done before, during a heist, yep. which he'd never been in before. So really, this seems to be the way to go.
Again, this has to do with sometimes not all kids should follow in their parents' footsteps. You have to give them a little bit of a freedom to decide what they could or should be doing, or are good at, for that matter. So
his mom's holding out on all the good stuff too. You know, she's got all yeah. this like cool tech and. Yeah. You know, just let him use some of it. I mean, now he's got super speed or whatever that is that he can do.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and he, like, that's all he needed. He's a new guy now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He was able to reinvent himself in the wake of, you know, spoiler alert, his mom's death. And I think that's, and he, again, you one of the people, like, there's a lot of, you know, people out there in the ether that like to say, oh, people need to get off of welfare and pull up their bootstraps and stuff like that. But dude, he literally did. Granted, he's in, you know, illicit or criminal activity basically, but at least he did it because it's the only way to make money in this era at this point. So,
yeah, I mean, and let's be real, those rich kids that are trying to beat him up and I think trying to chest bump, but it just always looked like pelvic thrusting. and there was a reasonable amount of pelvic thrusting in the first three episodes, but that's not what you do in a fight. These kids, mm-hmm. they're not from the streets. They need to learn. They're busy filling out forms for uniform exceptions, which back in my day, we didn't even get to fill out any forms. And I didn't have a uniform. We didn't even have uniforms because I went to public school.
Same here. We had dress code guidelines, but that's about it.
Yeah. We didn't really follow those. We would just get kicked out of amusement parks.
Hey-o.
We got banned from at least one. It was great.
There you go. I think it's funny that the come at me bro culture just never went away in this future here, in this possible future. So
makes sense. Or yeah. neither
healthcare did. Healthcare looks pretty similar too.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's 100% the case. Yeah, it's like you're not paying for the premium level, so we're not gonna save your life here, basically.
I did think the realest thing that I heard in the first three episodes was lure him with the promises of financial aid.
100%.
Like, yeah, no, that checks out. That you guys definitely work for an educational institution.
That's like the second best piece of educational related commentary since PCU and Droz's note about, you know, classes, nothing before 11. Beer, it's your best friend. You drink a lot of it. Women, you're a freshman, so it's pretty much out of the question. Will you have a car? No. Someone in your hall will. Make friends with them on the first day. So, you know, it's like the next best thing that was said about schooling next to that, I think.
And it was all downhill for Jeremy Piven after that. Let's be real.
100%. 100%.
I don't count Entourage.
Who does at this point? I mean, again, you know, when Entourage came out, it may have been more chic to be that douchey white guy kind of thing if you were in Hollywood, I guess. But now it's like, you know, not a good look. Other than that, I mean, so I had a question about this. Do you think like Lucy's character is like kind of like a throwback to the Lucy movie with ScarJo?
Oh, I never saw that. I know what you're talking about.
What movie is that?
It's the one where basically it's kind of like a little bit like Phenomenon with John Travolta, where she basically gains mental capacity to the point, and then it basically up to the point it pretty much kills her. And
oh yes, I remember what you're talking about.
So I didn't know if there was any, because again, we're talking about, you know, like you know, the Fist of the North Star, and there are plenty of other probably points that might went over my head at the time, but that, you know, that might have been like, you know, callbacks to various different other, not just anime, but other movies probably as well. I'm sure there's a lot of them.
Maybe, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It could be.
I just thought of some of the aesthetic with, you know, what she was doing on the train and everything else like that. There's a kind of a weird aesthetic, you know, with the way that the powers and everything were displayed, which were very much reminiscent of that to me in the back of my mind for some reason. But I do want to note, did you guys see what beer they were drinking?
Oh shoot.
No, I remember. I didn't notice
catching it.
Okay, it's called Brosif Brewing Company.
Yes, that's right.
Where is it from? It's from Boston, Massachusetts, baby. Yeah, so I thought that was great. You know, obviously a little jab at, you know, again, it's obviously meant to be kind of a Sam Adams kind of, you know, ripoff / clone in the future, but they had to call it Brosif, man, because, you know, they had the bro in there.
Which checks out, because the cyberpunk leader's name is Maine, spelled like the state, which is the weird yes. name for any human being.
Yeah. Unless you want to remember the Maine.
Ah, fair enough.
Yeah. Again, it was good. It was pretty neat. I don't know about you guys, but I was crushing on Lucy pretty hard at first.
I can see that, till she really screwed him over.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not sure I love anime in general. And one of the things I don't love is the like anime women. And the little bit I've seen, they all seem to have variations on the same character. And I'm sure anime fans out there will be like, no.
No. Actually, you know, Jason,
there's all this nuance to it.
Jason, you're 100% right. That there are clear archetypes that exist.
So the way I would describe it, it's like an incel's dream of a woman.
Yes, it's 100%.
She's confident, she's sexy, she's scantily clad, she's badass, but she's also kind of girly, and she's also totally like cool with the protagonist for like no apparent reason.
Yes.
You know, like
this is exactly what it is. It's basically, you know, the writers or the people who do this, like, if I had my dream woman, who would it be? And like, oh, and in fact, she's also into me. Yeah, 100% accurate. Because again, the viewers of anime want this wish fulfillment. This is like something they always do. That's why, you know, so many anime have like this younger, I'd say more generic looking kind of, you know, protagonist. So you can kind of imagine yourself being that role.
But you could apply that concept of imagining yourself in the role across cinema. I mean, it's kind of the foundation of Lauren Mulvey's visual pleasure in narrative cinema, in that you're...
Sure.
The male gaze is an integral part of the cinematic experience. And at the time of the writing of that article, everything is very male centric and all about objectification of women and the female form. But yeah,
anime just takes it to another extension. And okay. I think that so I think another extension, I think that per Jason's point, yes, the archetypes are clearly there. Because again, for every one of those types of, you know, dreamy, misty, you know, woman, there's also like, there's more kind of like this, the quiet, submissive types. But again, there's a whole realm of them. If you bring up any anime that's made in the past 25 years, I'm pretty sure if you named an archetype or of some sort off the top of your head, you're pretty much would be able to find at least five characters within the first 5 to 6 animes you looked at.
Yeah, I don't know if I love that. It's a little weird. I don't know.
Yeah, again, we never grew up in Japanese culture, so there's a whole other layer of societal stresses and you know, things that people have dealt with. So again, for me, it's like I recognize it when it's there, and like the tropes are, you know, super hard in some cases, like in this case. But I don't know, they're just, again, maybe I just, a lot of the women I've seen in anime have been more kind of like some other archetypes, like the aloof genius kind of like, you know, kind of female I've seen sometimes. And or again, there's a lot of, you know, different archetypes, even in Black Lagoon, you know, we've seen like some more extremes of different kinds of, you know, figures there. But yeah, no, but I, even though I'm an anime fan, I recognize the fact that some of these things are more extreme, I feel, than in other genres or media.
I guess, Jason, in terms of archetypes, maybe a better question is to turn around in that. Is there like a particular movie or cartoon series growing up where you're like, you totally crushed in like on a particular female character?
I actually want to address this question as well. And I had a note about this too, but go ahead.
I mean, sure. I can't think of any particular one right now.
I'm going to throw out a name right there because I think this kind of jives with one of the cartoons of our youth. I've mentioned one before. I'm going to mention a different one because I happen to think about this more clearly, you know, as it relates to one's predilection, for, say, for redheads. And the name is April O'Neil.
Ah, yeah. From Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's fair. Yeah.
So again, there, I feel like there's some people that have had that, or Chitara, or, you know, there's some people that have the, you know, Princess Alora from Voltron. There's, again, there's a whole bunch of them out there. People might even like the Baroness or Lady J for all I know. I don't know. Although we could probably spend a whole episode talking about that. That's a kind of a psychological, you know, rabbit hole we probably should not go into.
Yeah, that's true. I'll just leave mine at Scarlet from G.I. Joe and we'll go from there. So
Fair enough.
But I'm just trying to think, like, sort of, is there a contrast from all the anime archetypes of these overly sexualized women that potentially more appealing?
Are you saying, like, only, like, animated, or?
Not necessarily, no.
Just, no, but just from your childhood. I mean, it could be, like, you know, probably other people you haven't thought about.
You know, especially, like, back in the 90s, I think they were more willing to have, you know, I mean, you'd watch, like, Saved by the Bell, right? And
great example.
I'm not even sure there was one. It was like, you know, if you were a young guy, it was almost like, well, which of the girls, women on that show is the, you know, your type of thing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure for young ladies who might have been watching the show,
yeah,
are you a Zach Morris or are you a Slater type?
Yeah.
And, you know, but I even there, and, you know, Saved by the Bell, which was an extremely, like, silly, not serious, the characters are not really characters, it still didn't feel like any one character was like a perfect fantasy of what you wanted a woman to be. They still felt like they were actual people. Whereas, I don't know, there's something about the anime female type that just, it feels too much like it was just written as a pure fantasy. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I love it. I'm not sure I think it's the healthiest for young guys to be exposed to that and think this is what women are like.
I think I'm going to have to, like, I think I'm going to have to give you an anime at some point in the future that's not going to have that archetype in it, just so you can see something that does not necessarily focus on that. So I might have to give you, like, you know, Promised Neverland or something, you know, in the Ghibli or related kind of sphere from there, Makoto Shinkai, some of his stuff maybe, because again, they still might be wearing, you know, fuku, you know, the sailor uniforms, just because that's what they wear for their school. So I can't take that sexualization that some Americans perceive out of that, right? You know, especially if it's a school age kind of, you know, kind of character. But at the same time, you know, it's not the same perception over there all the time as it is over here. It is perverted, pun intended, sometimes. But, you know, at the same time, the archetype that you're talking about definitely exists across a lot. But I can't say it's 100% or even 95%. So
fair enough. I also noticed there were a lot of butt shots in this show.
Yes.
Like, yes. Like randomly, you'd be like, that's an interesting angle they choose to shoot this scene from there, right at her rear end.
Are you going to say it or should I, Nine?
That's all you, man.
Fan service. Yeah, so that's another trope within anime is that some shots are very, you know, very much posed for certain reasons, and it's just to give service to the fans who enjoy or might enjoy that kind of vantage point.
So, do these people know there's porn out there? Like they do know.
Yeah, but again, like, you know, back in the day, it wasn't as readily available, and like it was, you couldn't necessarily go and. Again, there's a stigma.
Come on.
I know, but there's a stigma of basically just jumping the gun and basically going towards that content, right? So I'm kind of the mindset basically where they get a little bit of their jollies, so to speak, by having this and not having to go overboard. Fine. And plus, the characters that they know and they understand, yeah.
And fine. Fair enough. If this is your thing, totally fine. But then I, as a viewer who is not necessarily looking for cartoon sex symbols,
yes,
left going, is this a show for me or is it not? And when it starts getting a little too cartoon sex symbol-y, I'm like, you know, maybe this isn't my kind of show and maybe this is why they have a hard time connecting with a broader audience, notably any women whatsoever, like any of them.
No, you're... Again, I'm an anime fan, but what you're saying is definitely on point.
And now I'm going to get roasted on Reddit for saying all that.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. They're like, oh, what's wrong with fan service, man? Yeah, just like with any content out there. Okay, this the world of content, and I'm going to quote I'm going to indirectly kind of paraphrase the one, the only Mike Stanchill Porter out there on this, in that the world of content that exists out there is like a buffet table. You take what you want and you leave what you don't. And you have to respect that for everyone. Not everyone's going to love the show that you love. And the sooner you come to grips with that, the sooner you can possibly go out there and get a real job.
But they should. Why won't they just love the things that I love? That doesn't make any sense.
there are people out there that you provide valid recommendations, probably more so than us, Margaret Lyons, and maybe they should follow those people.
All right. Before we wrap this up, and you know, I don't want to end on us talking about animated butts
choices
and and those devices that they were using to. If you would notice that they would have something strapped to their groin while watching the adult content.
Yes.
In the show.
In this case, to throw back to friend of the show, Dave, there is an interface this time. that's a nice little inside joke back there. But yeah, it's interesting you bring up the headsets, Jason, because I talked about, you know, throwbacks to other content. Have you guys seen any of the tech war related movies that William Shatner did off of his books?
No. Years ago.
But it's almost the exact same setup and framework, at least for the headset piece. It's very similar.
Okay.
So I felt that was a throwback too, but I could be wrong.
You know what that stuff reminded me of? Do you ever see the movie Strange Days?
Yeah.
You know, and it would have this idea of it would like record memories and you could upload memories. And it had very much reminded me of that. I don't remember if I liked that movie or not, because I watched it like 20 years ago.
Same.
But, you know.
But no, that's another good comparison right there. Because obviously, you know, in order to make these items, they had to pull from actual footage or some way of pulling that information, right? I mean, just like how awesome the sim was that Lucy showed of being up in, you know, space and whatnot on the moon. You know, it had to come from someplace, you know.
Yeah.
It had to be programmed or filmed or something.
So before we wrap this up, was there anything that stuck out to you guys, you know, let's say positive, that really, you know, stuck with you while watching the show?
That's a great question.
Well, so what did you guys think of the animation style?
Okay, Nyan, you don't have to answer that.
what did you guys think of the animation style then? I'm just curious to see what you guys thought.
It was fine. I wasn't mad at it.
Same. Again, I felt the same way. I wasn't mad at it. The colors, it was very colorful. Your son did mention it was going to be colorful, right? I totally agree with his statement there. But the style wise, like I said, it was fine. I didn't love it or hate it. So I'm in the same camp as you guys. So
I liked a lot of the visuals. I liked the scenes where he was walking down the street, and you had this whole tableau of him going down and the people who were, I don't know what they look to be, like drunk or on drugs, or I don't know, maybe it's like cyber dope addicts. I don't know.
Cyber addiction is a real thing in the Tech War series, I might add. So,
well, there you go. I really like that. I thought that part of the animation was really, really interesting. I don't know why. Is it purposeful that it's so like, it used to be animation had this very unique style because they kind of had to. It was the only way they could like pump out that many episodes. So they would do like really rough, really simple animation where like most of a scene wouldn't actually move. You'd only get like a tiny little bit of movement in a jaw or something like that.
Right.
But this is modern, presumably very well funded and, done with computers.
Yeah.
Modeling. Is this like a stylistic choice you think that they do it that way instead of making it look more animated?
Yeah, that's a good question. My question would be to the animation team is like, well, how much of the OG game aesthetic were you trying to preserve in the anime?
Oh, that's fair.
And how that related to how they basically did things. So that is a really good question though, because it's like, but as far as the technology to make the animation, because again, if you look at, Do You Remember Love, the OG Macross movie, and you look at that comparatively to this, it's like there is such a unique difference because it's not more like jagged or edgy, I'd say, but it's more precise in its borders and its shading and the whole nine yards. So I tend to wonder that maybe it's a combination of those factors. They want to stay loosely based on the video game, but also have kind of this cyberpunk, obviously kind of look and feel to it is what I'm guessing.
And I almost wonder if it's maybe to hit the expectation of what anime would ultimately look like, right? So that you're fitting within the genre. So I'm going to an extent, kind of mirror what came before to keep folks engaged and to not pull them out of the element when they're walking and expecting something, a specific aesthetic, or at least something similar to that. And as opposed to what might actually be a bit more up the designer's alley, personally.
Right. I think I'll finish it. I can't say I'm not going to go out of my way to finish this. There's a lot still, hanging on my plate. I mean, we'll have assignments here, and there's stuff that I want to potentially give as an assignment in the future, obviously too. So there may be things that will take precedence. I think I might finish it by the end of the year, especially since I have some downtime later in December. But we'll see.
Nyan, what about you? I know you said you weren't a fan of it and probably weren't going to finish, but any final thoughts?
Nothing crazy. I mean, I think the other thing that I could see appealing to your son is that they end up telling off authority figures a lot in this. They spend most of his time telling off people. So, I mean, I get it. And I guess in that sense, it wouldn't be terrible to watch. And maybe I'd continue it, especially since these are really quick episodes. If these were longer, true. I would check out completely, but... and if I ever play the game, I may actually revisit the series, but otherwise, I'm probably not going to keep up with it.
Again, the World Buffet Table content, do it.
That's what we thought, I guess.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.